Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We are so glad you're here with us tonight. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, up against the Canadian and Idaho borders. We have a new sunspot today, number 12 of the new solar cycle. It's a high-latitude reverse polarized spot with little potential for flare action. The solar wind is flowing from a coronal hole, which should reach Earth on May 5th or 6th. That is your next best chance for an aurora borealis if they are actually caused by the sun. They may be caused by the Earth or the magnetic ropes that bind the sun and the Earth together. We're still working on that answer. The solar wind is a swift 551.6 kilometers per second right now. OPEC's president on Monday warned oil prices could hit $200 a barrel, and there will be little the cartel could do to help. The comments made by Chakib Khalil, Algeria's energy minister, came as oil prices hit a record peak close to $120 a barrel, putting further pressure on global economies. His remarks suggest Algeria wants OPEC to continue to resist calls by U.S. and European leaders for the cartel to pump more oil to help ease prices. But Mr. Khalil blamed record oil prices on the weak dollar and global political insecurity, he added. The prices are high due to the recession in the United States, and the economic crisis, which has touched several countries, a situation that has an effect on the value of the dollar. Each time the dollar falls 1 cent, the price of a barrel rises by $4, and of course, vice versa. It's kind of interesting that he would say that, since the United States is not currently in a recession, but happens to be growing at a rate of 0.6%. No inflation, no recession. Nice, steady growth. The Chaitén volcano spewed light ash on a nearly deserted village Saturday, 2 days after its first eruption in thousands of years. Just 6 miles away, the volcano belched fat smoke plumes that at times rose as high as 12 miles into the air, the government's emergency bureau said. Kind of interesting that we would have a volcano erupt. We're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. One of the amazing things that happens each Sunday evening here at X Squared Radio is that we get to talk with the world authorities on all kinds of subjects, but that sometimes does not leave enough time for your calls. Last week we had so many people who could not get through that we decided to open the phone lines for the entire program tonight with the other world authorities on all kinds of subjects. You. So pick up the phone and call in and we'll talk about it. About what? Anything you like. Doesn't matter. U.S. toll free 888-228-4494. Anywhere toll free in Canada 877-489-6350. And anywhere else on planet or off planet. If you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us, 530-776-5154. If that one's busy, try 5185. And if you're using Skype, you can reach us at bbsradio_com. Or if you're using PalTalk, you can just simply reach us at bbsradio. Now, it may have seemed just like another improbable scene from a Hollywood sci-fi flick. Tom Cruise battling against an army of robotic spiders intent on hunting him down. But the storyline from Minority Report may not be quite as far-fetched as it sounds. British defense giant BAE Systems is creating a series of tiny electronic spiders, insects, and snakes that could become the eyes and ears of soldiers on the battlefield. Prototypes could be on the front line by the end of the year, scuttling into potential danger areas such as booby-trapped buildings or enemy hideouts to relay images back to troops safely positioned nearby. Soldiers will carry the robots into combat and use a small tracked vehicle to transport them closer to their targets. Interesting. So next time you see that bug crawling around, step on it. While some of the creatures will be fitted with small cameras, others will be equipped with sensors that will be able to detect the presence of chemical, biological, or radioactive weapons. Interesting. Now, we don't normally talk about stories like this, but we're going to talk about it a little bit tonight. Broadening his attack, Barack Obama said Saturday that Hillary Rodham Clinton's support for a sometime break from the federal gasoline tax symbolizes a candidacy consisting of phony ideas calculated to win elections instead of actually solving problems. Normally, we don't get involved with politics on this program, but this hoax goes beyond the pale. The issue is not the price of oil. It is the availability of the oil. People need to understand that our demand exceeded production this year. By 2012, we will be experiencing fuel rationing. The term essential vehicles only will become a common phrase on the cable news channels. Now, the only way you will still be free to drive when and where you want is to change the source of fuel from petroleum to algae, period. Now, it hurts enough at the pump to be mad enough to do something about it. Let's get with it, people, and start putting your voluntary tax dollars into biodiesel made from algae and non-food sources of oil, like canola or camelina seeds. It is going to take a few billion to turn this runaway wagon from the cliff, so let's get started. I just don't want you to, and I repeat, I don't want you to be fooled by vote-buying tactics from the candidates, even if one of them did succeed in getting the tax lifted. It would only come back shortly after the election at a higher rate. Don't trust the candidates for 1 minute to do what they promise. Remember, they are all seeking one thing and one thing only, the White House. Once they get in, all bets and promises are off, and there is nothing you can do about it. So don't be swayed by those campaign promises. Also in the news, there has been some very unusual seismic activities on Earth lately. And by lately, I mean in the last 30 days. When you're talking about terraforming changes, when you're talking about the age and behavior of planets, 30 days is a microsecond. But let's just recap the last 30 days, what's been going on. There were more than 700 earthquakes off the coast of Oregon, with the strongest being a 5.2. This nearly broke a record set in the late 1700s when a quake caused a tsunami that nearly wiped out the coastal towns along the Columbia River. That wave came in three pulses. Seismologists are puzzled because listening to the earth rumble beneath the Juan de Fuca plate, by the way, they're using the geophones that are sitting on the bottom of the sea that they used to use during the Cold War to listen to ships coming in close, maybe quiet-running submarines. What they're listening to now is the sound of lava moving under the ocean floor. The mystery is that there are no known volcanoes nearby. Is there something lurking beneath the Juan de Fuca plate? We can tell you that in our third volume of The Arc of Millions of Years, there is a series of predictions about earthquakes and volcanoes. You'll remember from Volume 1, which was actually published in late 2004. It hit the markets in January of 2005. And at the end of January 2005, the quake that we predicted at the Afar Triangle in Ethiopia took place, and the earth ripped open exactly as we predicted and began filling in with the Red Sea, and there were eyewitnesses when that occurred. Just want to let you know that Volume 3 of The Arc of Millions of Years is now for sale. You can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and you can buy the book. Now, the book cover isn't up yet. For some reason, they're a little slow about getting that up. But by tonight, the book cover and the book will be for sale at the online store, which is at x2-radio.com. Or, if you want to, you can go to arcofmillionsofyears.com. You can just put in Arc of Millions of Years into Google, and it will come up. Go to that online store, and you will get an autographed copy. And we're going to have a special to go along with that in a couple of weeks. So if you buy one now, we'll put your name on the list and we'll send you those goodies as well. Now, there are more anomalies for the seismographic news. Near Reno, Nevada, there have been more than 1,000 quakes in recent weeks, but seismologists are confused about this series. Because instead of having a strong quake followed by aftershocks, the little ones are coming first, and then the big ones. The recent 5.4 quake was the strongest quake felt in more than 50 years in the area. Although there haven't been any injuries, seismologists are definitely worried something different is going on deep beneath the Earth near Reno, Nevada. And as if that wasn't enough seismographical news, in Santiago, Chile, a volcano spewed ash over Patagonian towns in southern Chile on Sunday, 2 days after its first eruption in thousands of years, and forced authorities to evacuate some 4,000 residents. There is no record of the volcano erupting in the last 2,000 years, according to Chilean geology officials. Chile's 2,000 volcanoes include two of Latin America's most active, Villarrica and Yaima. Scientists say some 500 volcanoes are potentially active. Chile has the world's second most active string of volcanoes behind Indonesia. Now keep in mind that these volcanoes once were so active that they wiped out a whole civilization that lived nearby. There are cities bigger than modern Los Angeles buried beneath the sea off the coast of Chile and the Yucatan. It is believed that the entire continent of Mu sunk beneath the waves after a series of volcanic explosions. We're not trying to be alarmists here, but we do want you to pay attention to current events, especially seismological current events, because when they start happening in close succession, even though they don't seem to be geographically connected, Oregon, Nevada, Chile, they're all connected to the same planet. Stress on the crust and under the crust is what wipes out civilizations. Just want you to be prepared and awake, and if possible, take the time to visit the coast and then move inland somewhere. Also in the news, there was a mysterious woman-like figure caught on camera as it hovered above mountains in Nuevo León City. Fox News, of all places, has carried the story of the sighting. Of course, the footage was again blurred beyond belief. So, come on, people, get those high-definition cameras going out there. We need something convincing that UFOs are real to get the mainstream people off top dead center. At least now, they're starting to actually run the stories without a naysayer right behind it saying, oh, this was nothing more than a weather balloon or a hoax of some kind. But a piece of metal or even an entire craft that we can touch and feel would be nice. There are some 40 million cameras out there, so keep snapping. Also in the news, the world will experience global cooling this year, according to a leading climate scientist. The head of the World Meteorological Organization said La Niña, the weather phenomenon which is cooling the Pacific, is likely to trigger a small drop in average global temperatures compared with last year. The prediction, which follows a bitterly cold winter in China and also the Northwest and the Arctic, is prompting some skeptics to question the theory of climate change. But let's not get carried away. La Niña is Spanish for the girl and describes a cooling of the central and eastern Pacific. It typically lasts for 12 months or so. In recent months, it caused one of the coldest winters in memory in China and brought torrential rains to Australia. You'll remember it snowed in Baghdad this winter, and there were record snows in South Africa, of all places, as well. Now, we have been warned and rewarned by many experts that there would be anomalies in the weather that might cause us to say, oh, gee, it's a little cold to be talking about global warming right now. But this is a hemispherical event that happens on our planet. As you know, the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition was scheduled to take place this summer. Last year, the winter of 2006-2007, global warming allowed the Arctic ice to open up for the first time in about 200,000 years, is estimated. and it was now accessible by ship, these more obscure areas of very deep, deep ocean, about 4,400 meters deep. And unfortunately, this last winter, the area refroze, so it is now currently inaccessible, even icebreaker. It is expected to thaw somewhat by summertime, and now there is only one ship, one civilian ship on Earth that can make the expedition, and that is the Yamal. We're hoping that the passage remains open for one more year, 2009, which gives us approximately 8 months to raise the funds for the charter of the Yamal. Now, we've been working on this for about 3 years, and some people say, well, gee, it's not that hard to raise $1.5 million. Don't kid yourself, people. Christopher Columbus spent half his adult life trying to raise money to find the West Indies. He finally had to sell the expedition as a religious one to expand Christianity into the West Indies to the flamboyant and way too wealthy Ferdinand and Isabella before he got his expedition funded. So it is difficult, and those of you that have been telling us to go to Discovery Channel or History Channel, you need to understand that although they're nice cable channels, they're just resellers of airtime. They don't really do anything. They just have producers that will raise some funds, do a small pilot series, one or two or three pieces, take it to them, receive a go-ahead to spend even more money, and put together a 10 or 12 or 13 episode series, and then they run it. And if enough advertising sells during that series, then it makes money. If it doesn't sell during that series, then you don't see the series anymore. The one that is the most successful right now is Sci-Fi Channel, and the reason they're successful is because they have lots and lots of science fiction that they can run, and they don't really do very much as far as new exploration or ventures outside of normal paranormal science. The others are just more for entertainment than anything else. They don't really actually do anything. The private producers out there are the ones that put the shows together and then take them to Discovery Channel or History Channel or National Geographic Channel and actually put them on. All three channels have a dismal track record of return on investment, so they do not actually venture out and do their own explorations. They have those risks taken by producers. So I just wanted to bring you up to date on the expedition news. And I also want to let you know, if you tried to call in last week, now the phone lines are open for the entire 3 hours. Toll free in the U.S., 888-228-4494. Anywhere in Canada, 877-489-6350. And anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 530-776-5154 or 776-5185. And even those that are using Skype, you can reach us at bbsradio_com, or if you're using PalTalk, you can reach us at BBS Radio. We are a member of the BBS Radio Network, and we're also being carried by the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith, B. We want to talk a little bit about new energy tonight. Of course, it's in the news. Of course, oil is going to reach $200 a barrel. Of course, if you have in mind that you want to do some drilling somewhere in the United States, good luck, because you won't find a free oil rig for about 18 months. Every single rig that can run, no matter what age, that can hold steel, it's punching a hole in the ground right now. Lots and lots and lots of profit to be had by American oil with a price set by OPEC. So what is the answer? What do we do when diesel fuel is $4.45 a gallon, people need to understand that this nation, in fact, all nations, run on diesel. They don't run on gasoline. Every banana that you buy in the store, every tire, every thread of clothing that you wear is delivered by diesel. This nation goes through about 35 billion gallons of diesel fuel each year, all petroleum-based. Well, maybe not all. Since about 1912, Rudolf Diesel came up with the idea, and his idea was to not use petroleum, but to use vegetable oil as the basis for biodiesel or diesel fuel. In fact, biodiesel is a much better fuel in a lot of respects. First of all, you get about three times the energy back than you put into biodiesel. Mother Nature does the rest for us via the sun. Second of all, regular diesel, petroleum-based diesel, has a flash point of about 180 degrees. This means that at 180 degrees, it puts off enough fumes that it can actually flash and cause a fire. Biodiesel has a flash point of 300 degrees. And that smell, you know the one, when you have your nicest suit on or your nicest dress and you're filling up that Volvo with diesel and you get it on your hands and you smell like diesel fuel the whole day, it makes you want to stop and buy a red onion to rub on your hands. At least that smells like food. Not so with biodiesel. There's no smell, no odor to be afraid of. It's actually kind of sweet. Smells a little like cooking oil, which really doesn't have any smell at all. And don't worry about spilling it on the ground, because it's also not hazardous, completely biodegradable. Oh, and burning it, that's one other thing. You know, we put it in our engines, we smash it at about 20 to 1 compression ratio, and spontaneously explodes into torque and power and delivers 80,000 pounds on 18 wheels to our local grocery stores. But biodiesel doesn't put any pollution into the air. Petroleum diesel is responsible for a lot of pollution. One of the things that they had to do to diesel fuel to make it pass emissions is to take the sulfur out of it. So they have to go through all kinds of refining to get the sulfur out of it. Well, unfortunately, when they remove the sulfur, they also remove the lubricity out of the fuel. And you kind of need that when you have an engine that's generating anywhere from 600 to 1,200 horsepower. And you have metal rubbing against metal. You guessed it. The engines running on low sulfur diesel are self-destructing. However, biodiesel replaces that lubricity. Most truckers, after they pay the $4.45 a gallon for their diesel fuel, they also buy additive at about $9 a quart, and they pour this into each one of their fuel tanks, raising the price of their fuel another 20 cents per gallon. Why? Because they're pouring biodiesel into their diesel to return the lubricity to the fuel so their engines will last longer. Well, engines that run on biodiesel last a lot longer, less wear and tear, more power, less pollution. Gee, it sounds like a no-brainer, does it not? So how do you make biodiesel? Well, it's a process called transesterification. There will be a test at the end of the 3 hours, so make sure to write that word down. Not really. What transesterification means is that you're taking the fatty acid, which is made by Mother Nature, and you're esterifying it. You're injecting oxygen into it, making a longer chain molecule packed with its own oxygen. by using an alcohol. It can be methanol, it can be ethanol. These kinds of alcohols are the most common. Of course, there's a big difference between the two. The second, you've heard a lot about in the news, ethanol. Ethanol this, ethanol that. Every politician wanted to ride the ethanol wave. Why? Well, mostly because there was lots and lots of federal money available, and corn growers liked it because every Kentuckian knows one of the easiest ways to make ethanol is with corn. You ferment it, and then you distill it, and then you collect the ethanol, and then you put it in your gasoline. Unfortunately, ethanol made through fermentation has a nasty property. One is that it picks up water, and it's hard to get rid of. And so you can't ship the ethanol anywhere. It has to be used locally. It has to be blended into gasoline locally. The other problem is now you can't put that gasoline in the pipeline because it rusts the steel pipes. It rusts the pumps. It rusts the valves. Nobody wants gasohol in their pipelines. So the only way to get it to the gas station is by truck. And there's one other weakness to it, and that is you get less power. And when you get less power, it means you use more gas pedal to go the same speed. And, well, nowadays with fuel-injected cars, it's not a gas pedal at all. It's the air pedal. You're pressing on an air pedal, which is shoving more air into your injection system. Your computer is sensing that, dumping more fuel with it, and that's how you get down the road. So these fuel management systems running on gasohol are losing 15 to 20% of their efficiency because they're running gasohol. It's called E85, 85% ethanol. The problem is that there's no long-term future for ethanol. Well, that is to say, unless you're growing corn. In the Midwest, a new phrase has come about. It's called corn on corn on corn. It means no crop rotation. Just keep growing corn. And that, of course, has spawned its own support industry of corn silo makers. And so the corn silo makers can't build the corn silos fast enough to store the corn, which is being stored for ethanol. Of course, now you realize, in a very short number of years, as is typical for American style, we respond to the call, especially when there's large, and I mean large, amounts of investment dollars available, and low-interest loans, and loan guarantees, and grants. There are now numerous 50-million-gallon ethanol plants sitting empty. You guessed it. Because they've driven the price of corn so high, they can't afford to make alcohol out of it. The other alcohol that I mentioned was methanol. Now, that's made a little differently. In fact, methanol isn't made in the United States. It's made in South America from natural gas. Obviously, it's anhydrous, meaning there's no water in it. It is perfect for biodiesel. So most biodiesel plants use methanol. They buy it from South America, ship it up here. A company will usually purchase the bulk of it and then resell it to the biodiesel plants. It's expensive. It's about $1.90 a gallon. And then you can take that and you mix it with the various bases like potassium hydroxide or sodium hydroxide because this makes a good catalyst. Also an available oxygen to be placed into the reaction. And you mix these three things together, a little bit of pressure, a little bit of heat, a little bit of settling time, and boom, you got some biodiesel. You, of course, have to get the rest of the methanol out of it because you need to put enough methanol in there to get the reaction to go forward. And if I haven't confused you enough, the result is that you get a nice, cheap, clean-burning, completely renewable fuel. However, with methanol, you're still not energy independent. You're still having to buy part of your fuel from someone else. And in the wintertime, when natural gas is at a premium, you can guess what the price of methanol does. That's right. It pushes it so high that it is no longer economically feasible to make biodiesel from traditional sources. What's the traditional source? That's right. You need an oil. And the easiest oil to get, because it is the most plentiful amount of crushing out there, is soybean oil. Although not very efficient, soybean only makes about 40 gallons of oil per acre. Soybean meal does draw a premium. And so a lot of the soybean farmers were selling their soybean oil to the biodiesel plants and then selling their meal on the open market. Unfortunately, due to the pressures of the ethanol market, and also the low-hanging fruit for biodiesel, it pushed the price of soybeans so high that now, of course, you can't afford to make biodiesel using soybean oil. It wasn't very efficient to begin with. The next step to go with the oil is oil seeds. And this is not beans now, we're talking about seeds, canola and camelina. Both of them are pretty good oil seeds. Both of them make great biodiesel. Unfortunately, canola, not really a food, it's more of an oil maker, isn't really competitive for an American crop. Its cousin, called rapeseed, is grown prolifically in Canada, but canola is not grown too much in the United States. We'd like to see more of it, of course, because canola has about 120 to 140 gallons of oil per acre, and the meal is excellent. Of course, again, that low-hanging fruit to strip every bit of oil out of that seed, it requires solvent. And what they do is they use a cheap solvent called hexane, and they actually dry out that seed, every molecule of oil that it will come out of it, using hexane. And then they just evaporate or distill the hexane off, and what's left is the oil. Unfortunately, hexane is left in the meal behind, and then that is sold to feedlots and dairies. So, yeah, you're getting hexane in your milk. So, what is the best of all worlds? Well, the best of all worlds wasn't available until just recently, and it also wasn't very well funded until recently. So now you're going to see a new generation of biodiesel, much cheaper to produce, not a batch system, continuous manufacturing. It is a technological hurdle, and I'm not prepared tonight to give you that technology over the radio. But suffice it to say that plants are being built. In fact, there's one not far from me right at this moment that do utilize this new technology, and you will see cheaper fuel coming through the biodiesel pipeline. Oh, one other advantage to biodiesel, it can be piped. It can go in the pipe. It can be stored. It is, in every sense of the word, just as good as regular diesel. Some people have complained about cold weather performance, and yes, there are sources of feedstock like peanuts and safflower and different things like that that have the biodiesel is only viable above 55 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, those of us that live in the United States realize it gets a lot colder than 55. At least this winter, it was colder than 55 today here in Washington. So it needs to have some cold weather performance, and that can be done with additives or by blending with regular petroleum diesel. And there are even more higher performing fuels coming down the line, and you'll see them before too long. But, you know, we've been talking about beans, we've been talking about seeds. There is another source, and it's actually the original source. What do I mean by that? I mean oil. Yeah, the black stuff. Texas tea. You know, light sweet crude. That originally came from algae. The same algae that turned that toxic CO2 atmosphere that we used to have billions of years ago into oxygen, that algae. And now there has been discovered a strain of algae that actually makes oil. It makes the same oil that's perfect for making diesel fuel out of. There are also algae that's good for jet fuel. There are algae that are good for different kinds of kerosene. But this algae is perfect for diesel fuel. Of course, the other advantage is, instead of producing 40 gallons or 140 gallons per acre, it produces 4,000 gallons per acre. There are some technological hurdles. Many, many people have tried to grow algae all kinds of different exotic ways. Japan just finished spending $200 million on a study in failure. Several universities have tried in failure, and there have been numerous startup companies raise literally tens of millions of dollars recently and tried and failed. And there is a company out there that is doing it. And you're going to hear about them before too long. We're coming up to the top of the first hour. I do want to remind you the phone lines are open, 888-228-4494 in the U.S. Anywhere in Canada, toll-free, 877-489-6350. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, you can reach us by calling 530-776-5154 or 5185. We had several people last week that wrote us and complained that we did not have time to get them on the air. We had William Buhlman on the program. He is the author of Secret of the Soul, and he's also the author of Adventures Beyond the Body. We were talking about out-of-body experiences, and we were talking about astral travel and even multidimensional existence. And it was a subject that you were most interested in but didn't get a chance to get through. So if you want to continue that conversation, we can do that tonight. You can call us in and or call us up here, and we'll talk about that. If you have another subject you want to talk about, it doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's not a conspiracy theory or a ghost story, and as long as we can look at it positively, we'll be happy to talk about it, whatever it is you want. I have one more piece on global warming, just to let you know that, as if you're not already aware, this is a political football, for lack of a better word. It is something around which many of the candidates will hang their hat. They will raise the banner. They will do their best to try to raise every bit of dollar that they can for their campaign by using it as a war cry. In USA Today, there was a story, and it has great big letters, Global Warming, heating up the discussion about global warming. Now, this is how crazy it will get, and I'll show you how investigative we got here. The missing ingredient is the force of public opinion. That's the line Kathy Zoe recalls from former Vice President Al Gore when he urged her to become CEO of the Alliance for Climate Protection. Americans are aware of global warming, but they don't get the urgency of it, and that is solvable, says Zoe, who took the job last year. The new group is about to launch the most ambitious U.S. marketing campaign ever on climate change at a cost, now listen closely, of more than $100 million a year for 3 years to focus on the urgency of the problem and solutions. The need for a different approach is apparent, environmentalists say. We've come up against a brick wall with Americans, says Lee Bodner, executive director of EcoAmerica, a Washington, D.C. environmental group. Despite widespread familiarity with global warming, only a small group are changing their behavior. Well, we took this a little step further. We contacted the folks at the Alliance for Climate Change, Alliance for Climate Protection, and we asked them what they were willing to do with their $100 million. that there were companies out here doing something about global warming. There were companies out here with the technology to reverse global warming once and for all, really, seriously. And I mean in the short term, not 50 years, not 10 years. In 5 years, adopting these technologies, we could reverse global warming caused by CO2 and pollutants put into the air. We could get ourselves off of foreign oil by only replacing 17 billion gallons a year of diesel fuel. That's doable. That's doable. And it doesn't take much land to do it. And it would create jobs, and it would stimulate the economy. And guess what? You would never, never be subject to the world forces on fuel shortages again. Imagine that. Reversing global warming, establishing energy security, and eliminating the need to go to war to fight over oil forever. Doesn't that make sense? This was the proposal we made to the Alliance for Climate Protection. Obviously, they wrote us back and told us that they were in the business of collecting money, not paying money out, especially to people who are actually doing something about global warming. We also contacted the folks at Eco America, and they wrote us back as well and said they're also in the business of taking money from people, not giving it out to people who actually have a solution. So we want to let you know there are a lot of companies out there. There are a lot of candidates out there. They have no more concern about the climate or about the economy or about you than our enemies do. They're only concerned with one thing, raising money, lots of it. $100 million a year for 3 years is $300 million. To do what? To sensitize people to a political call to vote. That's right. It's entirely nothing but a voting machine. Front page, USA Today. We're going to take a short break. And after the break, 3 or 4 minutes, we'll be back with more of X Squared Radio and your phone calls. Don't forget, the lines are open all night. It's no one but you and me here tonight, affecting the universe. Foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared.
Have you ever thought about owning a telescope?
I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back. We're here at X Squared Radio.
Expand consciousness.
We want you to know we're here all night, 3 hours. Just for you. This is a 3-hour program. So be sure, mark it down, tell a friend. Because we want you and your friends to come here to the BBS Radio Network. We want you to listen to X Squared Radio. This is the fastest 3 hours of nighttime talk radio. And normally we have a guest on, we read books. Right now we're reading The Unknown Universe by Dr. Richard Hamilton. And we're going to bring that, Hammond. Great writer, very fresh, and great ideas on the nature of the universe and some of the mysteries thereof. And we're going to have him on the program, but we decided to just take tonight, just you and me, just to talk. Sometimes we do a lot of listening here because we want people to tell their whole story. We might ask questions that go a little beyond your imagination, but that's what we're here for. This program is formed to be positive. That's why it's called X Squared Radio. Anything put into that function is positive, except one number, of course, and that's the imaginary number I, which is the square root of -1. So the program's really not about me, it's about who we can have on the program, but not at the expense of the listener. And so that's why we decided to open the phone lines tonight, because now we want the other world authorities, and that's you, the listener. So we're here for you, anywhere toll-free in the U.S., 888-228-4494, anywhere toll-free in Canada, 877-489-6350, and anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us. The area code is 530, and the phone numbers are 776-5154 or 776-5185. And for those of you using Skype, you can reach us at bbsradio_com or PalTalk. It's just simply BBS Radio. Something you need to know about BBS Radio, we've been here now for 3 years, and in that 3 years, BBS Radio has grown arguably the most visited online talk radio network in the world. I don't make that claim lightly. And it is because of the hosts that are with this network and because of our illustrious producer who tirelessly loves what he does and brings us to you over 18 hours a day, every single day, including Sunday nights. appreciate him. We appreciate the efforts that he puts out. So thank you, Don. And we also want to thank Kevin Smith, who also broadcasts this program over the Steel Eye Media Network. He is also a pioneer in Internet talk radio. Now, if you Google Paranormal Internet Talk Radio, the number one radio program in the world, in the free world, is X Squared Radio. We come up number one on the global Google search. Paranormal Internet Talk Radio is right here. We have been growing at a rate of 50% a quarter for 3 years. It is the fastest growth rate, and it continues, mostly because of the guests that we have and because of our format. And we try to stay positive, and we try to include you, the listeners, as much as we can. And I must say, you are a group of eclectic listeners. Intelligent, aware, conscious, powerful, and each one of you affecting the universe in your own way. You know, we believe here everything we do will eventually affect the universe. And we're going to talk a little bit about those effects and what we can do with those effects in our third hour. So we do not want you to go away. We're going to talk a little bit more about coming events we want you to be aware of. Not that we are doomsayers. We certainly are not. We believe that we have within us the power to manage this planet. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about food storage. The folks down at NitroPak have a special on right now. You can get 12 MREs with 8 varieties. Most people only give you 6. And these are fresh. 12 MREs for less than $70. Now, these will keep for up to 10 years. And I can tell you from experience that they are delicious. And they're more than you can eat. They're packed with protein and flavor, and they're not like anything you would expect. They're not lightweight because they are fully cooked, and they do pack all the moisture that they would normally pack with a meal. So when you get beef stroganoff, you get beef stroganoff. One thing is for sure, they are wonderful if you've been displaced by some disaster and are out on the street. We have had some tornadoes just kick the stuffings out of the Midwest recently. Lots of people out on the street, living at the church, living at the shelter, who once, a couple days ago, had a nice warm house and a plasma screen TV to watch. Put a few of these MREs in your 72-hour kit and keep it by the door, especially if you live near the coast. One of the things we want you to be aware of is off the coast of Oregon, the western coast of the United States is extremely populous, and it is called the Pacific for a reason. It is the passive, very calm sea compared to other oceans around the world. But it has awakened in times past. Not in recent history, because we have coastal cities like San Diego and Los Angeles, we have San Francisco and Portland, and we have Seattle and we have Vancouver, we have all these wonderful deep water ports, and millions upon millions, tens of millions of people that live along the western coast of the United States. Yes, it gets rocked from time to time, every day, by little earthquakes, and we kind of get used to it. It's got its four seasons, just like every place else. They're just a little different. Flood, drought, earthquake, you get it. You know, you understand what I'm talking about. Just a little bit different in the four seasons mix. But the one thing that hasn't happened in a while, at least since modern news has been keeping records, is a tsunami, a tidal wave. And I don't mean a tidal wave like what we saw in Malaysia, you know, something 30 feet high that can take low-lying areas and wash them clean and take people that are touristing there or are unprepared or live in houses on short stilts. We're talking about a tsunami on the nature of 400 to 800 feet high. Now, I've spoken to experts on this. Stan Deo says that a tsunami that size would travel between 200 and 600 miles an hour under the water. We're talking a shock wave coming through the water. And of course, as it reaches shallow areas, the sea begins to withdraw as this wave approaches, and the sea literally just goes out like a massive undertow, and that wave swells. Now, when that wave begins to make its way to shore, it is traveling between 200 and 600 miles an hour. That means that by the time you see the wave, for instance, if you're at the end of Santa Monica Pier, your hands wrapped around the upper rail of the handrail, looking to the west, by the time you saw the horizon begin to swell with the wave, you would not have enough time to get to the top of the pier and get across Santa Monica to get away from it. What you can see from the handrail of the Santa Monica Pier is about 10 miles. You're a little bit off the water, so you can see a little bit further than you can when you're standing on the beach. You can see about 10 miles. At 200 miles an hour, that's the slowest that a tsunami would travel. At 200 miles an hour, that wave is traveling about 300 feet a second. That means that it's doing a mile, it's doing 2.5 miles in 45 seconds. 45 seconds times 4, which is the 10 miles that you can see from the handrail of the Santa Monica Pier, is about 2.5 minutes. 3 minutes at the tops. 3 minutes. How far can you run in 3 minutes? From a dead stop, if you were at the beginning of the Santa Monica Freeway with your car already running in drive, if you put your foot all the way into the radiator, in 3 minutes, you would only be about 4 miles away. That means everything from Santa Monica to San Bernardino is underwater. Now, I don't need you to do too much math. Los Angeles County alone has 11.5 million people in it. Extend that out to Burbank, Pasadena, Hollywood, Arcadia, Chula Vista, Hawthorne. Take in all of those areas as well. And now you have something that's so catastrophic, the news wouldn't even cover it. If it happened north, like, say, off the coast of Oregon, say, the Juan de Fuca Plate we were talking about in our first hour, and there was some subcrustal upheaval, like a volcano eruption from underneath the water, and I'm not talking a little open crack with a little bit of sulfur bubbling to the surface. I'm talking something on the order of Mount St. Helens blowing up out of the water. That 50 megaton explosion that we called Mount St. Helens from under the sea would virtually wipe out everything north of the Columbia River in a matter of hours. Everything that you see on the coast would be gone. These are the kinds of rumblings that go on beneath our planet. These are the kinds of forces that are coming to bear on the Earth right now. Are they coming from inside the Earth? We don't know. Are they coming from outside the Earth? Quite possibly. Because all of the planets and their moons are undergoing massive seismic activity right now. Our moon, Saturn's moons, they're all undergoing massive seismic activity. What is it caused by? Interesting. We do know that our universe is expanding. Hubble was brilliant in his observations, a contemporary with Einstein, who blundered his way through a universal constant and then retracted it. And still, toward the end of his life, although he realized that the universe must indeed be expanding, nobody was prepared for the fact that that rate of expansion is increasing. If the universe was formed by a Big Bang, one instant in which everything went from about one proton-sized location to where it is now in a billionth of a second, you would expect that when that explosion was over, that much like tossing a rock straight up in the air from the moon, that it will slow, it will top out, and the gravity of the moon will come back, and the rock will come back to the ground. All that matter should be slowing down, cooling off, and beginning its trek back to that original point from whence it came. But that is not what is happening. What is happening is that the universe is expanding, and that rate of expansion is continuing to increase. So what is filling in the gap? When we look out into space with our telescopes, with anything, with radio telescopes, with visual telescopes, infrared, X-ray, you name it, we only pick up a certain amount of matter. Unfortunately, the movement that we see between galaxies, between clusters of galaxies and superclusters of galaxies, the pull on the visible matter that we see doesn't match with what we see. What actually is indicated is there is about 94 to 95.5% of the universe that we cannot detect in any way. We can't see it, we can't hear it, we can't detect it, it doesn't put off any wavelengths, but it is pulling on all the rest of the matter in the universe. Well, this is where it gets kind of interesting, because if you'll look down at that mouse beside your computer, go ahead, wrap your fingers around it. It feels pretty solid to you, doesn't it? Move it around. It's definitely there. It's not an illusion. However, every single molecule, every atom, every subatomic particle in that mouse that you're now holding in your hands is just energy. And it was once a wave, then observed into a particle. And the particles have been manipulated by those who know how to manipulate particles in wonderful injection molding machines, and they made the plastic parts that make that mouse that you're holding onto right now by the millions. We know how matter acts once it's 3D. But the rest of the matter in the universe may be not solid yet. It's still a wave, or maybe something in between. So the thought is, the realization is, the experimental data is, maybe dark matter, dark energy, is the subconscious mind of the universe. And we can discuss that, if you like, toll-free, anywhere in the U.S., 888-228-4494. Anywhere toll-free in Canada, 877-489-6350. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get us at 530-776-5154 or 530-776-5185. If you're using Skype, you can reach us at bbsradio_com. And if you're using PalTalk, you can reach us at BBS Radio. Now, one of the things that we notice from, according to our AccuWindow forecast, is that it's 76 degrees up here in the Northwest. That's pretty amazing, seeing as how a couple of days ago it was 36 degrees. This may be the first warm weekend that we have had. It may be that way everywhere in the country, and so a nice, warm spring Sunday evening may not have anybody sitting at home listening to Internet Talk Radio right now, but that's the wonder of Internet Talk Radio, because you, my friends, are at work, and it's now Monday or Tuesday, and you have downloaded this episode of X Radio, and you're listening to it as an archive. And I'm here to tell you that that doesn't change a thing, because you can write us. You can write me at bagnew@x2-radio.com with any comments, any questions. Those of you that have written in the past know that I answer every single email, because every single person out there is important to me. Your ideas, your feelings, your wonder, your ability to understand who you are, who we are, where we came from, why we're here, where we're going, you know those questions. The same ones you've been struggling with your whole life. We ask those questions as well. We talk about those answers as well. All right, we can swing back to the idea about energy, because we had talked about ethanol and what a bad thing maybe it was made by corn. Not so, really. Just like all congressional performance that we've seen in the last 25 years, it's sort of ready, shoot, aim policy. It's what is the low-hanging fruit today? Poor congressmen and congresswomen really have no choice. It's kind of the fault of our own Constitution, not that it's perfect, not that it's flawed. But the instant that a congressman gets elected, he has to go immediately back into campaign mode.
We have a caller line four.
And I think we have a caller, so caller, can we have your first name and where you're calling from, please?
Yeah, Brooke, this is Mark from Albuquerque. How are you doing today?
Hi, Mark. Gosh, I know the weather is absolutely awesome outside, and that's where everyone is.
That's about time, huh?
Yep, it's about time. I was almost convinced myself that global warming was a myth.
Yeah. Wow.
When it snowed Wednesday and it sleeted Thursday, and I was beginning to wonder.
Yeah, we could have used some of that moisture down here in New Mexico. It's been very dry this winter. We haven't gotten hit with any of those storms that you guys got hit with. They stayed well north of us, and so it was very dry. And we have a big fire going on south of Albuquerque. It's 12 square miles so far.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, and I just heard it on the national news for the first time. It started April 12th or so, I think, something like that. I mean, they weren't even talking about it.
Well, one thing about...
They were worried about 300-acre fires in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, we have them, but what some people don't realize is that there is more freestanding timber in the United States now than there was at the signing of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, gee, how could that be? You know, we've got freeways and highways and schools and cities everywhere. It's because we put out the fires.
Yeah.
Well, back in 1800s, when they had a fire, it just burned.
Mm-hmm.
And that may also be contributing to global warming, because you know, when you burn a couple of million acres of pine, the soot gets up into the sky and it blocks the rays of the sun, and it actually helps cool the earth. Aerosols help cool the earth.
Right.
When you put out all the fires and you keep the air clean of all aerosols, all that solar radiation comes down and hits the earth and warms it up.
Well, I wanted to call in. I heard you speaking about what is possible, the possibilities and probabilities coming up very soon. And I had just fairly recently heard about the electric universe theory, which seems to be more likely than the mainstream idea of what's going on in our universe. And I was wondering what your take on that is.
The electric universe?
Yes, where it's rather than atomic and gravity driven, it's actually everything can be shown in the laboratory as being electrical in nature.
I asked a person recently, an electrical engineer that I know, because we were trying to solve this programming problem, and I asked him, Mike, what is electricity exactly? And he couldn't answer me. He said, you know what? I don't really know what it is. I know how it works. I know when you plug things in. I know about torque and horsepower and voltage and amps, and I know about switching and magnetism. But I don't really know what electricity is. So when people say it's an electric universe, I have to kind of agree, because what it does, it indicates a multidimensional universe.
Right.
One question that I asked a physicist, Ronald Mallett, recently, I asked him, if you have a wire that stretches from the sun to the earth, and you plug that wire into an electrical outlet on the sun, 93 million miles away, and you flip the switch, how long does it take for the light on Earth to light? What do you think his answer was?
Immediately.
No, his answer was 8 minutes.
8 minutes?
He says it takes 8 minutes for the electrons to get from the sun to the Earth, traveling at the speed of light along the copper wire.
Okay.
And I said, well, Mark, isn't it a little, Ronald, isn't it a little bit like a string of pool balls, billiard balls, along that wire? And if I smack a billiard ball on the end of the string at the sun, one billiard ball pops off the end on Earth. Isn't that what it's like? It's not exactly the same electron that lights the light as entered the wire at the sun, right? So I think you're right, Mark. I think the light would light instantly.
Well, yeah, because I can't explain why I said instantly, but it just seemed like the right thing, intuitively, that this is what it is. And there's many things that have to do, you know, if you look at Tesla's work, where he took energy out of what he called the ether. Well, if there's no, you know, that's saying that, well, there's no power generation, but there is power generation. The sun is the power generation. Now, we just feel it as the warmth of the sun. But what is that warmth? What is that energy, that solar energy? Is it radiation? Or is it a vibration, a vibrational thing that is akin, or actually is, what we know as electricity?
Well, that's a good question. What is electricity? You know, we talk about electricity because we are banking on those electrons doing exactly what they're supposed to do all the time, and they do. Otherwise, you wouldn't be hearing me right now, because we're converting our voices into electricity by a little vibrating coil that's behind that little diaphragm in your telephone. And it's changing that vibration into an electrical impulse, which is now going across the phone lines and various switches and amplifiers, reaching my ears and your ears and the ears of the listeners. Kind of an interesting prospect. But when you get down to the molecular level, you just take a big molecule, like, say, gold or an enzyme or something, and you chill it down really, really cold, like down close to absolute zero, minus 273, 0 degrees Kelvin. And you look at the electrons as they're slowing down in this electron cloud around that molecule. You would expect to see something on the order of the model of Niels Bohr, some little solar system with little tiny planets or moons going around a nucleus, right?
Right.
That's not what we see. What we see are the electrons blinking in and out of existence from one location to another location. And there are two questions that really hit you hard at that moment. First of all, why is it that these electrons are not attracted by the protons beneath them and fall into them just like a Earth? And the second one is that the same electron that blinked out a few moments ago, or is that another electron coming from somewhere else?
What if they're all one electron?
Well, I don't know that they're all one electron. One thing is for sure, they're countless. I mean, they're just countless. They're just too many to even think about a number. And they're all the same.
Right. Well, the reason I say one, not just one individual little electron, but as we, as humans, are made up of those things that are of Earth, and as the Earth is made up of those things that are made of the stars, and we are made up of those things of the stars, it's all one thing. It's
well,
perception
I see your point
that makes
now.
It individual thing.
Because the first question I want to ask myself is, wait a minute, are we really that electron stuff that Mark's talking about? I mean, is that what really makes Mark Mark? Is that what makes Brooks Brooks? No. I'm something completely animated, completely mobile and independent from this fleshy, overweight thing that I'm looking at now. I'm not electrons. I'm something way different than electrons. And yet the two are occupying the same space, operating in harmony with one another so that I can at least interpret this universe through whatever senses remain with me. And yet I know that you are and I am connected somehow. To what?
Well, that's well, it depends on what your perception of what that could be. I mean, scientific, you know, that's why I said it could say it's electrons. Well, no, that doesn't make sense. Is it matter? Well, kind of, sort of, but what is matter? But the same thing, that the collection of electrons that are vibrating slower than other things, than something else to our perception, and our consciousness actually forms those perceptions. So it's hard to say what that all is. Some, most people call it God, I believe. That's my understanding, is God or the creation or the one that is the maker, the creator of all things, that connects everything, not just us. But as your guest last week was speaking of, we may not need phones. It's just the electrons that are floating through the air, are being directed, and all these different energies kind of take all that away from us to be able to know without physically speaking what each are perceiving and be able to communicate. I didn't mean to get off on that esoteric stuff.
No, that's okay, because you're heading in the right direction. You mentioned the word consciousness.
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because consciousness is definitely intertwined with everything that is or could be, not only the universe, but the pre-universe and the post-universe. So there are two states, right? There's conscious and there's what?
Well, I don't know that there's another. I don't know that there, you know, you say that the dark matter would be unconsciousness, but I'm not sure that that's exactly true.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's just not conscious that it's conscious.
But I can't, you know, I can speculate, but I can't know. I simply because, just as what we call our unconscious, is it really unconscious until we perceive it? Okay, so that means that it was always conscious. Consciousness, but we were not ready to perceive it. Once we perceive it, then it becomes consciousness.
Well, so you're talking about a state of awareness. You're talking about, now consciousness is not conscious or not conscious. Consciousness is the energy force, the energy presence. We might even call it source, if you want to.
Yeah.
This is the stuff of the universe. This may be the stuff of God. And when we talk about God, most people talk about judgment and death and heaven and hell and all of those kinds of axioms. But what we're really talking about is a creative force or a creative energy, or just energy itself. And it exists in two different states. One is love and the other is fear.
But once again, wouldn't that be rather than separate things, because you say one is one and one is the other, is opposite sides. We'll use an example of a coin. Opposite sides of the same coin. So it really isn't two separate things. It's merely different aspects of the same thing.
Well, I understand that, but what you claim by that is that the coin exists because it has a head and it has a tails. And the coin could not exist without a head and a tails, because you can't be on both sides at one time. That's a little bit Klingon, if you don't mind my saying so, because we assume, because we can only see one side of a thing at a time, we're not omnipresent, we're not omniscient, that all things have two sides, that love exists only because fear exists, and fear exists only because love exists, when in reality it is possible for only love to exist. And as we see on the evening news, it is possible for only fear to exist by itself without love being there.
Okay.
Well, what I'm saying is we look at art with eyes on one side of the face and one ear on one side of the head and one ear on the other side of the head. But when you look at some art, cubism, for instance, you're liable to see both ears or both eyes on the same side of the head, because in the higher dimensions, there are no sides. Everything is visible.
Right. And when I use the example of the coin, it's simply for reference purposes, because of the fact, if you try to explain the interdimensionality of these things, you have that where you would have what you just described. And yes, it can be separate in but they all exist together. That's what I was trying to get at, is even though one can exist outside the other, the way that it's been, that as we have perceived it as people, as you know, and is that there are not, they're not opposites per se. They are coexisting together simply because that's the beauty of the universe is the coexistence of all these things together. Well, you know, we took fear and love, which we say are opposites. Well, maybe, but maybe not. There could be love and fear and love, but it doesn't seem that way. I mean, I try my best to exist on love and not have fear, but the fear is prevalent and it's palpable. And as our good friend Mihail says, it's the more powerful of the two, which I kind of not agree with. but it is a more overwhelming thing is the fear, because it's so based in survival. Whereas love, even though it's usually that's how things are created. Things usually aren't created in fear. They're created.
That's true. That's true. They're normally destroyed in fear. And fear, as you said, is a natural state, and natural in a Cro-Magnon sense, that we're fighting or we're flying, you know, based on fear. Anyway, hang on, Mark. I think we have another caller on the line. Let's see if we can get two on at the same time. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Jackie. I'm calling from Mariposa, California.
Well, hello. What was the first
name
again? Nancy?
It's Jackie, with a J.
Oh, Jackie. Okay. Well, you're on the phone with me and with Mark from Albuquerque, so how are you?
I'm doing very well. This is my first time ever listening to you. And actually, even at the beginning of the show, a neighbor called me over for a few minutes, and so I miss even the beginning. But for some reason, I felt impulse to say something, and that was that. Pardon?
Subjects. In our first hour, we're talking about various subjects. You might have to turn the computer down.
I have it down, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, then
The thing that I wanted to say, which I think leads into what you were talking about, you and your other guest, is that I personally am feeling as if I'm more of an energetic being, and recognizing that in my expression of myself all the time. Whereas I used to, you know, be under the illusion that I was a, you know, solid three-dimensional kind of solid being. Now I feel like I'm an energy being. And I feel that energetic identity. And I don't think I'm alone. And I think more and more people are feeling this and understanding it at a personal moment-to-moment experience. And I'm wondering if this is coming from a shift that we're having in our, say the solar system, you know, being more active, the sun being more active, if we are in fact going through mass enlightenment, or you know, I mean, I see spirituality everywhere I go, and anyway, I just wondered if you would talk about that.
Yeah, sure.
If you know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about. In dark times, when the world is far away from these, what seem to be galactic vibrations that pour through the solar system, and conscious beings pick up those vibrations and are inspired thereof, and then realize, hey, that person that I see in the mirror, that's not me. I'm somewhere right behind that. I've got all these other capabilities that are now coming alive. In dark times, we've made up religions and rituals and idols and icons and all kinds of things to keep those things alive in us. But now, it seems like they're spontaneously coming to life, like the sun is putting out the exact right wavelength to grow that flower inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And people are becoming aware of that. And it's not that they're drifting away from religion, not at all. They're
mm-hmm.
drifting towards spirituality, just like you said. They're becoming more spiritually awake. It's just like they're awakening out of a sleep, and they realize that they have almost a galactic purpose for being here on the Earth at this time with unlimited abilities and unlimited resources at our hands.
And there's this connectedness that people are feeling with each other, as if we know that we're one being, just in different expressions of each other. And it seems much more universal than, you know, say, even 5 years ago. I don't think it's just me either. I think it's happening en masse to people. And I'm wondering also if these shocks that we're taking to our system when we deal with the political situation and 9/11 and the betrayal of our government and the Illuminati and all these horrible shocks that we're dealing with, if they're not, in fact, triggering the awakening also.
We're having a bit of a difficulty here with phone lines. I broke in. Everybody can hear me right now. I apologize. I'm not quite sure what's causing it, but we'll keep going and hopefully it'll subside.
Yeah, we can make it out pretty well. I mean, we're dealing with all kinds of electronic interference of various kinds. No conspiracy, I'm sure. It's just the nature of Internet talk radio. I think I'm feeling the same thing that you're feeling, Jackie, that people, we're in a very amazing generation now since 1996 or 1997 when people became, well, they had access to the greatest library, the greatest Gutenberg press idea of the Internet. And now, for about 10 years, that people have had access, and probably for about 5 or 6 years, they've had broadband access to the Internet. And it is changing the way people think. We now realize, hey, I don't have to go through a professor to get this information. I don't have to go to my local library, which may only have limited resources. And I don't have to go to my pastor or my preacher or my local clergyman to get spiritual information. I can get it on my own anytime I want it. And I think this is part of the awakening, too, don't you think?
I do. The gatekeepers are gone. We can go to the source.
Hi, Jackie. This is Mark.
Hello.
You're not alone. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who are awakening, who are coming to their spirituality of who they really are. And I am one. And
mm-hmm.
I've been in contact with many, many more. And just wanted to let you know that, no, you're not alone.
And it's such
actually,
a beautiful thing. Because so many of us have suffered a dark night of the soul, at least I have, when I came to awaken what's going on in the world and had to just go down deep and really heal myself from these things. And to I haven't been able to put it all into perspective as to why these events have happened. But I can tell you the flip side of this is a much deeper spirituality instead of a superficial feel-good spirituality, if you will.
It's real.
It's real
to you, whereas it wasn't. It's not something that someone else is saying that you should feel. or that you should do, or that is the right thing to do, you know intuitively that it's you. It's what's yours.
And
what is true is it's everyone's. It
exactly.
is everyone's, and it's still that individual understanding. But like I said, it's not something that someone tells you. I mean, it's
right.
not in a book. It's not. It's within you.
Like we've become our own gurus, you know.
Well, yeah. And then as far as the other Dark Night of the Soul, it's basically the illusion is coming down. We're actually seeing
mm-hmm.
and hearing.
But I think what happened is that because we got shocked, it kind of reverberated in our own being, and it realigned me. It realigned me to much greater abilities within myself. So the first time I heard George Bush's voice on the radio, I'd never heard him speak. I heard him in 1999 for the first time. It felt like someone punched me in the stomach. Well, no, I got nauseous. And my...
It goes back to Reagan myself, but...
yeah, I was too then. But I got nauseous, and I even said, I was with some Republican friends, and I said, oh my God, can't you hear the deceit in his voice? Oh my God, you know, I really, like, just let it go, you know?
yeah.
But these kind of events, they and of course it was right on, which that and a million other experiences where you know you're right on, even if you feel isolated, you know the truth when it hits
right.
you and strikes
that's
you.
That's why I said I wanted to let you know that you're not alone, just in case no one else has told you that. No, you're not.
Yeah.
And there's more every day, and it will continue to grow, just like tsunami that might happen from the underwater volcano exploding. That tsunami is unstoppable. This tsunami is unstoppable. The wave
it
of
is.
Consciousness is growing daily. And
well, what I want you guys to concentrate on is that this not be a tsunami of revolution and of destruction, but a tsunami of
not at all.
No, well, that's the whole revolution, actually. The whole revolution is stop that.
Right.
Children,
stop that.
But I have to tell you that I had to go through a lot of dark nights before I said, this is our opportunity to bring forth the light.
Right.
And
well, to hold the light.
In all of our little communities or wherever we're going to end up, you know?
Yeah, well, if you hold the light, This understanding that you have, you project it, which
mm-hmm.
makes it contagious, so
mm-hmm.
that other people start saying, well, Jackie sure is bright. I don't know what's different, but she sure is,
mm-hmm.
you know, positive.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? And then they'll ask you, and you'll say something, and it'll trigger them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that... It's human contact. It's the actual, and Brooke, no, it's not negative.
And there's another
we're
thing.
We're out of balance with that. We already know that.
Right.
It's great. This is the greatest time in the history of humanity to be alive. With everything that's negative that's going on, it's still. Is the most positive, greatest time to be alive, and because what we're going to witness, and it has nothing to do with fear.
No, you know, evil does have an allergy. It's light, and all we really have to do, if we claim to be enlightened, is to flood the earth with light, and then evil has no place.
Well, to see the goodness in all things, even in George Bush, if it's possible, but yes, you know. and his cronies.
I'm going to go to negativity for just a second. You say, you know, Berkshire spoke about seeing it on the evening news. Now think about this. The evening news will say an hour in the evening and then an hour at 11 o'clock. You see, they tell you all the news of the world. You see all the negative. Okay, so that's 2 hours out of 24. They're reporting on all these things that are going on. What about the other 22 hours? That's all good.
Well, the other 22 hours, you have cable news recycling the bad news over and over and over again and just beating it like
a drum.
And,
right. But then if you immerse yourself in that, that's all the news that you understand. But really what it comes down to is on a personal level. You yourself, what did you do today that you had a negative experience that would reflect what the news shows? And in almost every case, there is none. You had a great day. You might have had some pet peeves, some little things that went wrong, but overall, the whole day was positive. And what happens is people get caught up in that 1 hour and think the whole world is like that, and they want to lock their doors, they want to buy guns, because everybody's getting murdered and... You know, everything's happening. No, it's not. That is illusion. To keep you locked in your house, not talking to other people, to experience the goodness of everyday life.
And there's always good news to grab out of something. You know, as violent as things are in the Middle East, when one realizes that the safest... We're just talking about homicides now. The safest city, large city in the world right now is Baghdad. That's pretty amazing. There's still good news out there.
Right. Yeah. And, there's always good news, because if there wasn't, we wouldn't be able to talk right now. That's the point. If all the bad news were endemic to everyone, we would be too busy dealing with that to be able to talk to each other.
Well, as we talked in the first hour, we were talking about these behemoth political organizations that are coming to power, and I mean they're raising not a little bit of money; they're raising hundreds of millions of dollars to manipulate the political system through ads and various forces like that. And they're doing it just to get power. They're not doing it to awaken anybody. They're not doing it to make life any better. They're not doing it to help green technologies in any way, shape, or form. The only thing they're doing is raising money so that they can finance their political machines.
Yeah.
To what end? It just drives me crazy.
I'm thinking
that maybe they're thinking that there's going to be like a major solar eruption, you know, that's going to disrupt everything on the planet. And,
there is,
you know,
going
I mean,
to be one.
I still am so scratching my head as to why they have to be so dang evil. I mean, why?
Well, just because you ask why is why you hold the light, Jackie.
Pardon?
Just because you ask that question, why are you silly people doing this, shows that you understand. Because they live in that illusion. They live in the illusion that power is the be-all, end-all. And it's not. Living is. If you spend all your time trying to attain power, what have you lived?
Right.
That's what it boils down to, isn't it? Now that you're awake, you're a conscious being, you realize that you're this energy being with all these amazing abilities, what is it that you're going to do? What are you going to create? What is your dream, Jackie?
Oh, personally, myself?
Yeah.
I teach a healing technique, and so I like to help others, which relieves a lot of trauma. in their lives safely and effectively. I have a family, which I love very much, and I just live a normal life. You know, I'm in my grandson's classroom on Thursdays and Wednesdays, and meditate, and I do ecstatic dancing in my own home to keep my energetic field happy and healthy, things like that. So I see myself probably teaching in the future. I have been traumatized, you know, in the last few years, so I am the kind of person that has, you know, saved extra bags of rice and things like that, and have some extra things for my family and, you know, this and that. So I'm not fear-driven, but I like to, you know, this is my third year at gardening, and I came out of Silicon Valley selling printed circuit boards, so, this is, you know, and then I moved to the hills, you know.
Yeah,
I'm trying
wonderful.
To maintain, I'm trying to create a sustainable lifestyle for myself, even though I'm not anywhere near of getting off the grid. But so, you know, I'm just trying to educate myself and do what I can for the future community that I would envision I'm going to be part of when possibly the grid goes down.
That's quite
and I see
cool.
those as small spiritual communities.
That's one of the most amazing.
I also am going to develop, I'm working on developing a higher consciousness towards water so that I can transmute water into a healing force, because it has a very high intelligence.
It
is. Very healing intelligence.
Now, water is the key to many things. We might talk about that one night, how powerful water is.
Oh, I hope so.
Water is a very unique molecule. It has properties no other molecule in the universe has. And when you stress it just right, it alters time.
Wow. I had never heard this.
It's true.
How do you do that?
Well, there's ways of stressing it with force. You can take opposite rotating motors, and you can push the water together in opposite ways inside a single containment, sort of recycling water around and around and around under great force. If you can keep the motor running, now, experiments that we have tried, the motor ends up burning up, but it's cold as ice. And the few times that we've managed to keep it going, we've actually altered time. So it's not something to be played with. Where the idea came from was from a Russian immigrant who was a POW. He's 6'4", and when he got out of the prisoner of war camp, he weighed 90 pounds. So to give you an idea what a survivor this guy was, he came to the United States and became a deep sea diver, and made a living salvaging scuttled German U-boats at the bottom of Hudson Bay, which you realize is, you know, one of the murkiest waters around. And one day he went over the side with an hour's worth of air, and he didn't come back for 4.5 hours. His wife gave him up for dead. They were already beginning search and rescue. When he came to the surface, pulled himself over the edge of the boat, set off his tanks, and he'd only used 15 minutes of his air.
Mm-hmm.
So his wife said, where have you been? You've been gone 4.5 hours. He said, well, you're not going to believe it. When I got down on the bottom, I moved toward this shape, which I had determined was a submarine laying there on the bottom to attach the cables to. I made a few steps forward, and I fell flat on my face in the mud inside an air bubble that was being maintained by a UFO.
Wow.
Now, it gets stranger because he gets invited on board the UFO, is shown their propulsion system, and he relayed that directly to my boss. And my boss built it. And this is how they move their spacecraft, is by stressing water. Water is an amazing molecule.
So, and of course we know that UFOs love to hang around water.
they zip in and out
of big bodies.
It's quite possibly where they stay on this planet is on the bottom of the sea. It makes up four-sevenths of our planet, and we only know about a few square miles of the bottom. The rest of it's a mystery to us.
Right.
Okay, Brooks, Jackie, I have to go, and I think your time's about up, Brooks. Keep being you, Brooks. I love you. Keep up the good work, Jackie. It was so nice
talking to you.
Keep being
Very
you.
Very nice talking to you.
Okay,
bye-bye. Mark. You'll hang around a little bit, won't you, Jackie?
Sure, if you want me to.
Yeah, let's do that. I'm going to run about 3 or 4 minutes of commercials, which we do at the top of the hour. You hang around, and we'll leave the rest of the phone lines open, and we'll be back just as soon as we get done with these commercials. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes. It's not that
Take
hard
your time.
To do.
Thank you. Take your time.
Let me get it started. Here we go. All right, Jackie, hang in there. We're X Squared Radio. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. With more exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. At NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TVT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TVT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the 6-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. And they have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first 2 volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The 3rd volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. We're talking about the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Normally we have a guest here on X Squared Radio, and we're trying to get Richard Hammond to come on the program. He should be on pretty shortly. He's written a book called The Unknown Universe and Other Unexplained Things in Science. Really an excellent writer, really a fresh mind, especially for a PhD. Great book. Let's see, put out by New Page Publishers, The Origin of the Universe, Quantum Gravity, Wormholes, and Other Things Science Still Can't Explain. On the back of the book it says, for the past 10 years, physicists have been banging their heads against the wall trying to understand one of the greatest new mysteries of the cosmos. Why is the universe pulling itself apart at an ever-increasing rate? Is this a mysterious new force, dark energy, or must we alter our most fundamental theories of space and time? And this is the thing that physicists are struggling with today. I don't think we're going to solve it by mathematics. We're trying, even though mathematics is a very elegant language, we tend to manipulate it by subtracting and adding things to both sides of the equation so we don't have to deal with pesky infinities, but we're doing our best to try to explain the theory of everything, why we observe the universe to be quite a bit different than what our theoretical physicists are saying should be out there. Right now we have Jackie with us. She's calling from California. And we were discussing some very unique properties of the molecule of water. And I had mentioned that stressing the molecule of water has created anomalies in time. Jackie, I was recalling another instance where there was a scientist. Actually, he was a geologist. And he had set his cameras up to photograph an ice dam in the fjords in Norway. As you know, the fjords can freeze solid and sometimes hundreds of feet thick. And then the ice begins to melt on the ocean side. So what you end up with is a large ice dam. And then there's this moment when the ice breaks loose and all that water moves at one time. And he wanted to get it on film. So he'd set his camera up day after day and he was watching it. And one day, all of a sudden, he heard a loud crack, and the ice broke, and this giant wall of water, probably 1,000 times the water that moves in off of Niagara in an hour, moved all at once.
Oh,
and he said that the ground, the rocks, the grass, and even him were covered in a blue plasma. And he said,
whoa,
for a few moments, for a few moments, he actually felt like he was going to die, even though he was way up on the mountain photographing this down below. When that much water moved at one time, it created a magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And he said after the water passed and the blue plasma went away, he had an incredible feeling of euphoria.
All right. I can imagine that. Because I believe water is a spiritual form, of course, of very high intelligence and healing nature, of which I can't explain because I can only explain it in my sense of it.
What's your experience with water? What besides drinking it and cooking with it? What is your experience? What have you felt? What have you seen?
Well, gee, to tell you the truth, I'm just beginning my journey with water, but it began through, you know how you pray over your food?
Sure.
I began praying over my water and feeling like it's become like an elixir instead of, you know, just something that might refresh you. And I also am a... I don't know quite the term, but a devotee, I guess, or to a guru by the name of Amachi, the hugging saint, or Ama, the hugging saint. And one of the pujas, this is at the ashram in San Ramon, California, and she's coming in June. She prays over water, and then each of us gets a little cup, and this is, you know, a couple thousand people, but we get a little cup of water, and then, you know, we end up bringing it home, and I still have mine from last November, and that I just take a sip a day, but I know that this water is blessed, and every time I sip it, it heals me, and other people that I talk to, when they sip their water, their body vibrates. And they can just take a drop of it.
Are you familiar with the work of Dr. Emoto?
Yes. Yes.
And how about Bill Tiller?
Yes. Not so much Bill Tiller, though I've heard him talk, but I don't know what has he done with water.
Well, the interesting thing is that both of these men have done work with consciousness experiments.
Mm-hmm.
Where people actually focus on water, with
mm-hmm.
Bill Tiller was actually the pH level. That's the inverse log of hydrogen protons that are available in the water. And with Emoto, it was the crystallinity of the water, which, as you know, from his photographs, are just stunning in result. And I can tell you, I know one of the first exposures that I had to analytical chemistry was a stereo photography of water crystals forming. I never got tired of it. Even though the science project was long since over, I kept all the photographs for years and years and years. I did this way back in the 60s. It was just amazing because it's so random and so beautiful and so artistic, and it's like the water has a mind of its own.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
like
incredible.
It reflects your consciousness.
It appears so.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then it is our intention itself that has an effect on that molecule.
It's our love consciousness that has the effect. Our really high consciousness of that's in every cell that we have, and we direct it towards water, and it creates a very high consciousness water. Well, I'm not going to say it creates it because it's already there. So how do you create something that's already been created?
Well, it's not that it's created. It's that you are... You're arranging its energy
in
a sense where it can become healing instead of poisoning. And one of the things that we overlook is that the human body is completely hydrated. We're, 90% weight, anyway, water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, the rest is calcium and carbon and things like that. But the rest of it is water. We're a hydrated being, and if our water is affected by the water
you
that we drink...
You have 2 minutes left on this call.
Well,
I thought I lost you.
No, I don't think we have 2 minutes left on this call. We get the strangest recordings that come in just out of the blue on talk radio. It's just the most amazing
thing. Because it's a high-energy show.
Well, you know, that water that you had blessed, that you had changed, molecularly energized and realigned by consciousness,
mm-hmm.
when you mix that water with other water,
mm-hmm.
that other water assumes the memory of the water that you poured into it, the higher consciousness water. So
because everything seeks a higher state.
Well, it does. But
do you think?
At least
yeah.
in nature, things seek a lower state. So it does mm-hmm. take intention and energy to get it to a higher state.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when we do that, when we impose our loving observation effect, as it were, on physics, it responds. It has to.
Mm-hmm.
So
that water is
amazing stuff. You have molecularly energized it, and it energizes anything that it touches.
Yes, through our own consciousness too, which I find amazing. Because another word that keeps coming up to me in my meditations and just thinking is that we're all becoming like portals of higher consciousness. So the word portal has become like a touchstone to me for some reason. So.
Yeah. Well, you remember when Jesus first came into the New Testament, he was doing things with water that
uh-huh.
people hadn't seen before, and
mm-hmm.
so much so that it made it into the New Testament as a great observation.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus threw out...
You have exceeded your time limit on this call. Sorry, we cannot process your call at the moment. Please try again later.
Okay, we'll try again later. Are you still there, Jackie? Hello?
I think we lost her somehow. I'm not quite sure, but she went bye-bye.
I hope she'll call back. That was the only time we've ever heard that message on this program. Well, maybe she had a prepaid cell phone or something and she ran out of time. I wanted to go ahead and make this point. Are you still there, Don?
I'm back.
Ah, she's back.
I don't know what happened. The line just went dead.
Well, the mysterious operator in the sky said that you had exceeded your time limit. And I probably have.
No, I'll tell you what's going on, folks.
What is that?
Often enough, you deal with phone companies like Vonage and AT&T and others, and you get so many problems that I can't recommend them. You know, I can't recommend communication companies all that well unless they prove to me any differently, but Vonage hasn't proved to me much yet.
Uh-oh. Well, I would say that we're probably resonating at a pretty high frequency and it's getting lines crossed or something.
Well, that's what makes the 3 hours on this program go in about 15 minutes, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, what I was saying is that you molecularly change this water. The water then affects the balance of the water in the human body, and then that water hydrates your cells, and you're actually changing your own body.
Mm-hmm.
And what you realize, just like you mentioned when you first came on, is that you are an energy being,
mm-hmm.
and you have at your command the most powerful consciousness or one of the most powerful consciousnesses in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus himself, when he was trying to teach us in the New Testament, said, why is this so amazing to you? You know, you can do this and more if you just have the faith of a mustard seed.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't doing anything that we don't have the ability to do. We are constantly in denial. And hopefully, like you said, we're at that point in the galaxy or the universe or some force is coming into the universe that those of us that are in tune with it, we're picking up on it, and we're awakening to those abilities.
Some alignment, if you will. Some great alignment. Another topic that's, and I won't hold you, I know I've been on a long time, but another topic that I find interesting is sound and how sound can affect water. Have you studied this?
I have. There's a whole field called cymatics,
mm-hmm.
where patterns are generated in water. Now, they have to use particles and dyes and inks and things like that in the water to actually see the patterns, sort of like iron filings on a piece of paper to show off magnetic lines.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that sound has a great effect on water,
mm-hmm.
and it also has an effect on the structure of the body. Music
right.
has a great effect, and what and how we listen to music has an effect on us.
Right. I couldn't listen to rock and roll during my generation, and, you know, I was just, like, kind of dumb about it for years and years, and then I finally realized, well, it's something I couldn't resonate to.
That
because it would
term.
Jar my system so much, you know.
That's a great term, resonation. And it
mm-hmm.
really depends on the music, I guess. I'm not
it
so
does.
Much the driving, you know, rhythmic beat, but things like Yes and Star Castle and, you know, different more artistic classical sounds made with electronic instruments seem to be much more pleasing. I love the electronic music. I'm a big space fan. John
really?
Liberta with Echoes and all of those programs. Just great, great stuff.
And I love actual live instruments. Because I feel like they have their vibrations are so strong that it just actually vibrates in my body.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's very dimensional for me.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
I feel exactly the same way. I mesmerize when I go to someone's house and they can play the piano or they can play the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Those vibrations made with the string to air and air to ear
mm-hmm. right.
just has an amazing effect.
Well, Brooke, I don't want to keep you. Thank you so much. I've very much enjoyed it.
You
okay.
make sure to put this number on speed dial and call us back another time.
I'll do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you for calling.
Uh-huh. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's probably what we love most about talk radio is that you're literally on the phone and on the net with millions of people around the world, and even though they're not listening live, you know that they're participating in these conversations, these wonderful spontaneous conversations where spiritual subjects can sometimes be talked about in a scientific way. And even more amazing, scientific subjects can be talked about in a spiritual way. The most that we can, we try to combine those two here so that science isn't so dry and, heaven forbid, spirituality become religious. And we might also say that science has become religious. And now we're going through somewhat of a religious revival where the homily of science is now breaking out of every independent thinker who has access to the same textbooks that every university uses for their degrees in astrophysics and chemistry and biology and geology. And they're not coming to the same conclusion because they have not been put through the government meat grinder where only the politically acceptable is espoused from the pulpit of the classroom. And yes, I use the word pulpit of the classroom on purpose. We want you to realize that those of you that are listening to this program on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, or some other time, that you are source. You actually have the ability and the responsibility to create your own wealth, that your life condition is the result of your own choices and your own energy. And as long as you can stay awake, as long as you can stay conscious of your life moment by moment, and you can listen to the resonation of your choices moment by moment, then you know when to step. You know when to hold your hand out. You know when to reach for the next rung, because it will be there, because you manifested it to be there. As much as is possible, we try to bring this program around to the positive as much as we can. Sometimes we have guests who espouse their theories, and sometimes the theories are flawed, but we nevertheless let them make their case. We don't take people apart on this program. We leave that up to you. Let you listen to the entire case as best as they can make it, and we'll try to ask as many questions as we can to bring that case out so that they have said what they really want to say, uncut off by commercials, unmanipulated by the host. Our phone number is toll-free, U.S. 888-228-4494. Anywhere toll-free in Canada, 877-489-6350. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, if you can get to that cell phone tower, you can reach us. It's 530-776-5154. Or, if that line is busy, you can reach us at 776-5185. If you're using Skype, you can reach us at bbsradio_com. Or if you're using PalTalk, you can reach us at BBS Radio. We are coming to you through the BBS Radio Network, the largest internet radio network on Earth. And if you do a Google search for Paranormal Internet Talk Radio, you're already at the number one radio program. We got that way because of you, because of our guests, and the way we approach their material. We are only on one day a week because it takes 6 days to prepare for 3 hours. We try to bring you the best 3 hours in talk radio, talking about the mysteries of the universe and of the earth. One of the things that was mentioned a couple times tonight was the dark night of the soul. There is a point in almost every life where we feel like we've hit the bottom. And I want to let you know that all is not lost, that there is no reason to purposely curtail one's life, either by becoming a recluse or through other drastic means, even drug abuse or alcohol abuse, because all of this, even the despair, is a wonderful experience for mortality. This is one of the most coveted places in all of the universe to have a mortal experience. After all, look who has been here. Just look in the history books, look in the records, look in the archives, look in scriptures to see who came here to have a mortal experience. It's important. Not all of it is glorious. And it doesn't matter if you come here with or without abilities. In fact, it may be to your advantage to come with a little bit of a handicap, poverty, even a physical handicap. Look at the great ones, the great leaders of all time. Were they born with a silver spoon in their mouth? No, not hardly. I'm not talking about the ones in power. I'm talking about the great leaders. Almost to a person, they were born with some kind of shortcoming, some handicap. Poverty, slavery, blindness, polio, some kind of thing they had to overcome. What you are overcoming now is the best you can do. You should be doing the best that you can do at all times, even experiencing despair. It's important not to be too locked into now, even though you are now, even though all your energy, it appears, is locked into the now, and you can't escape from it. You can observe more than that, including the future. And so if you're in one of those times when it seems like everything is going wrong, trouble comes in threes and you're at three squared, put yourself out in the future just a little bit, 2-3 days, maybe a couple weeks, and look back at the moment that you're experiencing now. Figure out how to go through this moment the best that you can. It's not so bad, not so hard. Remember, if you're on the bottom, there's a bottom below this one. Not so bad. It's a great time to be alive, and you are 100% responsible for your life condition. Turn it around through your own intention, and it must be positive. Do not, cannot, doesn't do anything. Go forward, can doing it. See it done. See it as though it is already done. Put your energy on that dream. And then do. If you're being and you're doing, you will have. The interesting thing is, if you're being well enough and you're doing well enough, it doesn't matter if you have or not. Because at the end of the day, it's not the have that goes forward with you forever. It's the doing and it's the being that goes forward with you forever. It's the doing and the being that you can hand on to your children and your grandchildren. It's the being and the doing that change worlds. It's the being and the doing that create life and create love. Having is a byproduct. Having is not the goal. Try building a sandcastle sometime next time you go to the beach. I don't even care if it's cold. Take a shovel with you and a bucket. Go ahead. Dig down deep. Pile the sand up high. And make sure to get as close to the waves as you can. It's best to build these at low tide, when the sand is nice and moist and stacks into whatever shape you intend. Build it high, build it wide. Sweat with it. And when you're done with the sandcastle, lean on your shovel, look at the sandcastle, and realize that the sandcastle wasn't the goal at all. It was the building of the sandcastle that was the goal. It was the building of the sandcastle that was the dream. It was the building that was the satisfaction. And the sandcastle will return to the waves and return to the ignominy of that smooth and shiny gray sand. But you did, and you were. And that's the important part. So when you're out there working today, realize if it's work, you probably need to find something else to do. Because if you really enjoy it, it's not work. It's fun. That's what we do every day. Every day. 7 days a week. 16, 17 hours a day. We are. And we do. And that in and of itself is satisfaction. If life ends through whatever means, the end of the proper functioning of your physical body, or some accident, or some cataclysm, planetary or local, it's okay. Because you were, and you did. And that energy goes on forever with you. Because you are Source. And you can't lose that unless you lose it. Well, that's enough philosophizing on that. But at least we get a chance to lay that with you. As you begin this May, and keep your eye on summer, make sure to think about what you're doing and how it affects the planet. not just your carbon footprint, not just conservation. I don't mean don't do things because you're going to expend energy and the waste of that energy or the consumption of that energy is somehow gluttonous and adds to the collective guilt of a once and great prosperous nation. Not that at all. I mean, think about what you're doing in the sense of adding to the collective consciousness of this planet and thus the universe. Because the universe is two things. First, it is the sum of the consciousness of every sentient being in it, whether they're conscious that they're conscious or not. Even those masses of people that you wade through every day that are asleep, their consciousness is affecting the universe, just like yours. The difference is you're doing it on purpose. We have another caller. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Yes, this is Tom from Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Talking about Roswell.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Yes, yes, yes. I wanted to know, what is the news, Tom?
Well, there's several items of news regarding Roswell. It's Tom Carey, co-author of the book Witness to Roswell, Unmasking the 60-Year Cover-Up with Don Schmidt. Firstly, my co-author Don is recovering from a very serious operation that he had a few weeks ago.
Was it nothing like
cancer or anything like that. It was a problem that he was having with his inner ear that required some, they had to go through the cranium. So he is home now in recovery, and we expect a full recovery.
That's good.
Hello?
That's good. Yes, wonderful. I'm just trying to send as much positive energy toward Don as I could. I had written you today and didn't know that you would call in, but I was hoping that you would when you were on the program with Don, you were talking about getting access to the actual goods from Roswell, and you made a comment like that might happen this year.
Yes. We have a source. One of the main criticisms of the Roswell case is that it's based primarily on witness testimony. And that's not to denigrate with witness testimony, but the skeptics and what have you, they will always hold out the notion that we don't have any physical evidence. There are a few documents, I must say, that do suggest a UFO explanation for the Roswell. Just hold up the fact that there is no incontrovertible physical evidence that has been put forth in support of an extraterrestrial explanation. Well, in the last few months, we have reestablished contact with a fellow that we had contacted about 10 years ago. His father, we know for a fact, was stationed at Roswell, the Roswell Army Airfield, back in July of 1947. There's no doubt about that. I won't tell you how we know, but there's no doubt about it. And 10 years ago, he gave us hints, shall we say, that he had certain information. And I deduced just from the hints generally what he might have, but then he stopped the lines of communication. And I more or less figured, well, you know, that's that. You know, there's nothing more we can do about it. He won't respond to us. Well, a few months ago, he contacted us again. Now, this is after 10 years, and said that he was ready to go public with what he had. And,
wow.
You know, what his father had left. And my guess was pretty accurate in that if, at least according to him, he's got two types of wreckage from the crash, as well as original photographs taken of the wreckage, taken at the crash site. You can imagine what might be in those. And
well, my question is, Tom, when do I buy my plane ticket?
Well, that's what I asked him. I told him I'd be on the next plane down, and but that my co-author wouldn't be available because of his impending surgery. So we put it off, and he said, "Well, in the meantime, he'll be making a trip to California to visit his father's brother, who also has some of the material, and that he will be bringing that material back, and that I won't be disappointed when I come to visit with him." So that's where we are right now. As we speak, I believe he's still in California, and I'm anxiously awaiting his return. So he says that he's not interested in, making money off of this, but he just felt that it was time that this should be known. So that's where we're at.
The truth has to get out.
That we will have, based on my conversations, I believe that we will have physical evidence before the year's over.
Well, what are your plans for when you get the evidence in your hand, in your hands? What are your plans for release of the data? You've got to be very careful how this is validated and how it's let out.
Absolutely. We have to see what sort of physical evidence that he has and how it can best be validated, and then what sort of shape the photographs are in. Because we don't want to destroy evidence, or we don't want to alter evidence in any way. So we need to determine, A, what exactly does the gentleman have, and how best can we validate it. So that's a very important step that we have to take. Assuming that it is validated, and we don't know that until we actually see it, then we will make plans in according to the gentleman's wishes. I mean, it's in his possession. It's his property in the family. We must act according to his wishes.
And, I understand.
We have several ways we can, if we're permitted to, to go forward with it. We have several ideas already in mind. So that's where we're at the present. I can report that since we last talked, I've gotten another email from someone in the United Kingdom, and this is a very interesting story, that he was over here in the late 80s and had a couple friends who had been out hiking in southeastern New Mexico, central New Mexico, and they found an object. This is in the 1980s. Near one of the crash sites. If you follow the trajectory from when the thing exploded over the Foster Ranch and to where it came to rest, about 40 miles north of Roswell, if you follow that trajectory, they found an object in the desert, and they don't, you know, they didn't know what to make out of it, and they didn't want it because there was a husband and wife team. The wife became very upset at this particular object, is not knowing what it was. She just had bad vibes about it, that it was something she didn't understand. So she gave it to this friend who ultimately returned to the United Kingdom, and he contacted Don Schmidt and myself. He sent us pictures of it, and I have to confess, I don't know what it is.
Wow.
It's something I've never seen before. It looks like some sort of, it's the color of a pumpkin, sort of an orangey thing. In the photograph, it looks like it might be made of plastic, but, you know, who knows? You know, we can't tell because, we don't have an opportunity to examine it in person. And it looks like some sort of receptacle where liquid might come in and be stored and then discharged. Appears to be an intake opening and then a something where there's a four or five discharge valves of some sort. It doesn't look like anything I've ever seen. And we've only been in contact with this person for the last week. So,
earlier we were talking on the program about propulsion system for a UFO that was observed back in the 60s, actually late 60s, by a diver who had inadvertently stumbled onto one. And that drive system utilized stressed water as its drive system, as its anti-gravity drive system. So it's quite possible that they are manipulating water in their engine.
Well,
that this,
it
this
looks
is
it, it looks like, you know, like liquid comes in and liquid goes out. But it's unlike anything I've ever seen. So the problem is that the gentleman is over there in the UK. And we're over here. So, of course, we would like to have the object analyzed. And
if you have room in your suitcase or on the plane flight for an analytical chemist, keep me in mind.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Well, he apparently has a friend who's an amateur geologist who couldn't identify it, but an amateur geologist is, you know, won't cut it as far as forensics is concerned. So,
yeah,
this is a recent phenomenon. If you have an email, I can email you a picture of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
if you'd be interested, because I don't know what it is, and maybe you have an idea.
I will. I'll get back to you within hours of when you email that to me. You've got my email address because I sent
yes.
you an email today.
Yes, I can email you a picture. I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. So, you know, maybe you can say, oh yes, that's the drive shaft of a camshaft, something like that. I don't know.
That's from
I'll
a
send
C9.
It to you.
From a case.
But on a more serious note, we do intend to have physical evidence before this year is over. We're the closest we've ever been to it. And,
wow.
Of course, we're still searching for and finding new witnesses since we last talked.
Well,
that's
important, too, because you're putting all of the pieces together. You know, you're actually making a court case complete with physical evidence for the existence of the arrival of an off-world craft to this planet.
Yes. Yes, with physical evidence, it takes perhaps the biggest argument away. Because if you remember that, this was back in July of last year, Larry King had that TV show with Stanton Friedman and that skeptic fellow, Michael Shermer.
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed with that.
Yes, well, Shermer's objection, and he hasn't done his homework, but he just keeps throwing up, where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? Well, legally, testimony is evidence, but scientifically, testimony is not evidence. Scientifically, and that's what he was referring to, you need a physical object to test.
We
hope to put an end to that once and for all.
Wow. I cannot wait. And I'm so excited. I'm just sitting here in eastern Washington State up near the border of Canada just wondering how soon we can get Don back on his feet and in good health and you know, go as a team. Let's go find out. I mean, that's what we're all about here.
Well, we both will be down in Roswell in July for the we go down for the festival every year where Don and I are speakers at the International UFO Museum, which is dedicated to Roswell. And the festival this year, I think, is July 3rd to July 6th, and Don and I will be down there then. We will be bringing with us, or we will meet him there, one of our key witnesses that we featured in our book, by the name of Earl Fulford. Now, Earl Fulford was a sergeant back in 1947 in the 603rd Air Engineering Squadron who had three separate activities involved in the recovery. He was part of the recovery crew that went out to the crash site and recovered pieces of wreckage. So he's a first-hand witness to actually handling and recovering actual wreckage from the UFO that crashed. He also was a witness to the 18-wheeler low-boy tractor trailer that brought the remains of the ship back to the base. He was on the base. He knew the driver of the truck, the tractor, and he just happened to be in the right spot at the right time when this tractor trailer came in. He waved it down, stopped the truck, and asked the driver, whom he knew, what he had underneath the tarpaulin in the back. And he could see that it was about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle, size and shape, but that it was covered up, and that his friend told him that he'd just come from up north of town, and he was told not to say anything about what his cargo was. And his third activity was that he was awakened in the middle of the night, around 2:33 a.m., when all this was going on, and told to report to the main hangar on the base. This would be Hangar P3, or Building 84, as we know it today, where the main recovery effort was directed. And there in the middle of the night, there was a C-54 waiting with a large wooden crate outside the hangar waiting for him to fire up this forklift and lift it up and deposit it in the C-54, after which the door closed and the plane took off. And that was something related to the recovery, because he said that the box was almost weightless. Now, this was a large wooden crate, and when he picked it up, he sensed that there had to be nothing in it. Well, we know that the wreckage was very light and that it had almost no weight. So he's coming to the festival, and what we're going to do is have him attempt to retrace his footsteps out to which crash site he went to as part of the recovery team. So that's one thing we're going to do, is try to have him retrace his footsteps. And then
sounds completely fascinating. And
nail
like
down that crash site.
Who was flying that airplane, and where did it land?
Well, it was no airplane, or it was no weather balloon. We know that.
Right. Well, Tom, I wish we had more time, but we're at the end of our 3-hour program tonight. Let's touch base during the week and see if we can't maybe get a little bit more information next week, and we'll find out how Don's doing. If there's anything we can do, of course, to help you, just don't hesitate to ask.
And he would really appreciate your concern.
It's definitely to have workers of your tenacity and qualifications to stick with it this long, because this is the
We are on the case until we cross that goal line. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. And our trust is with you.
Okay.
All right.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Take care now. My pleasure on being on your show, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Good night. All right. That was Tom Carey. He's author of A Witness to Roswell. The book is for sale on our website at x2-radio.com. We're going to get some more information on the Roswell physical evidence, and I promise you, if it's within our power, we will bring you the firsthand information as that breaks. We're going to try and make it world exclusive right here on X Squared Radio, the number one paranormal internet talk radio program in the United States. We'll be with you next week. See you then, Earth Explorers. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.
$5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.